I believe we are joined by Rick Sterling. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Phil.
Hey, Rick, it's great to be talking to you. Thanks for joining us. I think the simplest thing to say is Rick Sterling is an activist and author who's opposed to U.S. Military adventures abroad, and particularly in the Middle East. Rick has traveled to... I'm going to edit myself. I'm trying to learn to say South Asia or West Asia. That's it.
West Asia. Yes.
Because Middle East is based on the British way of looking at the world. So I've got to, I spank myself for that. So, Rick, I know you were interested in, and you've written about this matter. There's been, finally, the ice is breaking and demonstrations are beginning to happen opposing the deepening dangerous involvement of the West, led by the United States, in the Ukraine war. And there was a demonstration in Washington, got quite a bit of attention. But you're on the West Coast, and there was activity there. Tell us, first of all, how this is coming about, your views on the demonstrations and their principles they were established on.
Right. Happy to be with you, Phil. And I went to the demonstration yesterday in downtown San Francisco. There was about 200 people. You know, realistic estimate. A friend of mine got up and did an actual head count. He counted about 10 groups of 20. So that about 200 people. Not huge, obviously, but it's a start. We're sowing the seeds of something bigger and better to come. Mm-hmm. There were very good talks. One of the talks was by Eric Garris, who's the co-founder of antiwar.com. Uh-huh. I highly recommend that website because it's very factual, and they have new information every day.
So the name again is?
Antiwar.com.
Antiwar.com.
Yes. So we had a lot of good talks, and then we went from... I'm getting a little bit of feedback on here. Is it problematic on your side?
No, you sound great here. I'm sorry that you have to listen to yourself, but it's okay. Here. It's great.
Okay. I'll keep going then. So we started in the Embarcadero Plaza. We had speeches and talks there and a very spirited rally. And then we marched about 7 or 8 blocks to the office buildings of Lockheed Martin. That's not the headquarters of Lockheed Martin, which is in Santa Clara, down 30 miles from San Francisco, down the peninsula. But there's Lockheed Martin offices, and we had a good rally out front of there with skit, some creative playing, and songs and so forth. We had songs at the main rally as well, Free Julian Assange and other things. In Washington, D.C., I've looked at some of the speeches that are online, RageAgainstTheWar.com. They had thousands there. We just had a couple of hundred in San Francisco. They had 2,000 or 3,000.
I think that's almost a tradition, right? The main demonstration was in history. Yes. Is always how in Washington, and then other cities do their best.
That's right. We had what they were calling sister rallies that began spontaneously, actually. So, and I would highly recommend people check out the speeches at RageAgainstTheWar.com. There's a lot of eloquent speakers there. There are Dennis Kucinich, Tulsi Gabbard, Max Blumenthal. There were people from across the spectrum, from Libertarian Party through people who had been Democratic Party Congress people. In the past, Dr. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate for president.
Can I just mention there that I was impressed that the Green Party gave her the green light to do it. All these organizations had debates about whether they should participate, but my understanding is the executive told her, fine.
Yeah, I don't know the details of that, but I do know that Medea Benjamin of Code Pink wanted to speak at it and was invited to speak at it, but Code Pink, for whatever reasons, preferred for her not to speak at it.
She did attend. She was there.
The co-founder. Yeah, she was there. So Garland Nixon. People asked Garland Nixon. His talk was, "Why am I here?" And he said a number of people asked him why he's here. He's got a very short but eloquent explanation, very direct explanation of why he's there. He's an African-American journalist and an activist. Mm-hmm. I met Garland actually in Venezuela when we were both mm-hmm. there for the election in Caracas a few years ago. So, but I definitely recommend people check out RageAgainstTheWar.com. And you can see the watch some of the very eloquent speakers.
Mm-hmm. I was impressed, particularly. I thought Dennis Kucinich was terrific. He gave a really mm-hmm. tight, thought out speech, and he raised such an important subject. He took up the Nord Stream mm-hmm. sabotage. And said, why is no one in the United States, and I can say also Canadian media, do not even ask who did that? They don't ask their government. That was a major piece of sabotage. And he said that it in violation of the Article 1 of the United States Constitution, because if the United States did it, and he believes they did based on his reading of the article by Seymour Hersh, he said that's an act of war, and that the president and the secretary of state cannot do such a thing without the agreement or initiative of Congress.
Right.
And he
right.
says they should be held accountable. I thought that was terrific.
Yes, yes. Very good point. And some people, I mean, the time is right to get an anti-war movement going in the U.S. and, for that matter, throughout the West.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats and the Republicans are always at each other's throat on domestic policies, but on military, on foreign affairs, on foreign policy, on wars of aggression and intervention, all of a sudden the differences disappear. That's one united war party.
Yes.
So it's really essential for people all of across the political spectrum on domestic issues, if you're against the war and intervention and aggression, then we need to make common cause and mount a real mass movement and challenge the warmongers.
Yes. And you know, it was so important that there was Tulsi Gabbard, who ran for president. She was a member of the United States Congress, Dennis Kucinich. And, you know, that is, if you say, well, you know, electoral politics, that's where I am. Most American people, that's they base their participation on that level. Here are members of Congress who both suffered because they spoke up. But they have broad support across the country. Dennis Kucinich is very highly thought of in his circles in the Democratic Party, but also more broadly in Ohio. And same is true of Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah. That's right. Well, she was sabotaged by the Democratic Party leadership, and then some misguided leftists also attacked her, as you know, as happens. The left likes to form circular shooting firing squads, it seems, and attack each other. We need to regain the slogan of the Occupy movement was the 99% against the 1%. Mm-hmm. Which I think is pretty darn accurate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's 1% of billionaires and people who have got $500 million in wealth and are responsible for the neocon foreign policy that's going on, and the vast majority have no interest in that. It's just being done in our name without any consultation. Most Americans, if you had objective reporting, should we blow up the Nord Stream, you know, gas pipeline, which is supplying cheap gas to Germany, and should the U.S. do that? I mean, imagine if Russia blew up some strategic infrastructure of the U.S.
Yes. As they say, they would all go apoplectic if that happened. It's a really remarkable situation. You've written about it, by the way. Where can people find? I read your article on why this was necessary, and you were arguing for the February 19th because it was a good, was and is a good debate. I think we're going to benefit from our arguments about how to organize anti-war.
Exactly. And they can find the article. It's a short article at Dissident Voice, which is an excellent publication coming out of the main editor. She's kind of battling some health issues right now, but the main editor is Newfoundland. Dissidentvoice.org. Mm-hmm. Also published at Global Research, which, of course, comes out of Montreal, and antiwar.com, which I was recommending earlier, antiwar.com. It's the Daniel Ellsberg, the Pentagon Papers whistleblower, says he starts his day by looking at antiwar.com. and then after that, he goes to the New York Times to see what the establishment is saying.
Mm-hmm. I was very impressed also with the argument, and very timely, I thought, from Diana Johnson. Because she is really one of the most important veterans of the peace movement, going all the way back to her father, who wrote about the dangers of nuclear war. And she worked with the Green Party in Europe and lives in France. And she really has a good take on it. Cautioning everybody to sober up and be serious, and because the danger is serious, and to, you know, learn how to unite. I thought that was very helpful. I want to ask you, by the way, just on the, I can't resist raising this matter of the balloons, which I don't know if you've written or thought about it, but I was struck by one of the failings that we mentioned, the Nord Stream problem. Media doesn't talk about it. Now, for several days, I've been checking the Chinese media and their spokesperson, and they have said unequivocally that the United States has had their balloons penetrate our airspace several times in the past, since past May. They dated it. They said there's been many, I think that was the word they used, incursions by, but they hadn't done any, they hadn't reacted. Now, we're not even getting any report of that they just say, oh, China denies the one over the U.S. territory. But they've made a positive assertion saying, no, you were over our airspace. Mm-hmm. But the media here does not say that, and there isn't actually any real denial. Yeah. The U.S. hasn't actually, I think my impression is they're afraid to engage that subject.
Right. Well, the media made a big deal about the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin trying to talk with the Chinese equivalent, the top military official in China, after they had shot down, after they had fired a missile into the balloon. Mm-hmm. And the obvious question was, why didn't they talk before? Why didn't they ask, well, what's in this balloon? What's the explanation for it? They didn't do it. Afterwards, they tried to engage the Chinese, and the Chinese refused. They refused to talk afterward. The time for discussion was beforehand, because it was not a spy balloon or mm-hmm. anything like that. All the evidence is that it was completely innocent.
Someone told me today that the U.S. is kind of changing its terminology, going from the word spy balloon to surveillance, because of course any device to pick up information, meteorological, is surveilling. But the question is that anything new or special? Because apparently this goes on all over the place.
Yeah.
And
well,
go ahead.
Veterans Today, a publication, their online publication, which is, it's one of these organizations that leans conservative, but it's anti-war. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the people that, if you're anti-war, you need to get together. We need to form a coalition with other anti-war people. But they had a comedy article complete with a graphic saying that it was a weaponized hypersensitive condom that was that had been inflated to the dimensions that you saw in photographs, and so they had a picture of it floating above, and it was a pretty comical article actually. But
that would be mocking the U.S.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! Yeah, no, it's unfortunately this just seems to give evidence to the new hysterical, frankly, atmosphere we're in. You know, of course, it doesn't help much. The Chinese leadership have said to the Americans, could you please calm down? And, of course, when the Americans are told to calm down, they tend to jump up and down and pull their hair, you know. And that's,
right.
you
right.
know, everybody, the rest of the world actually is saying that, calm down. The game of saying, well, we speak for the world, it's very clear that the rest of the world doesn't agree with the way U.S. is approaching any of these issues, because all of this involves also other countries, and they would rather have quiet, diplomatic, state-to-state talks rather than saber-rattling.
Yeah, exactly. I think last time I checked, the U.S. had shot down, like, is it three or four balloons in the aftermath?
They got one over Lake Huron, but they missed it, by the way. The first one, the first shot missed. Now the evidence is coming in, apparently. I mean, this is the British paper, The Guardian, said it's apparently belonged to a balloon club in somewhere in Michigan, and that the balloon cost $12. But apparently somebody ought to study it because they missed it when the first shot.
Right.
And also... They've told us they're not going to be looking. They were going to be right on it and find out what that dirty little object was. But now they say, no, they're not even going to look in the Yukon.
I in my previous work, I was an engineer, and I did some work. We did science experiments with high-altitude balloons. In the U.S., the National Scientific Balloon Facility is located in the middle of Texas, in Palestine, Texas, and I know from having worked with science balloons that are launched out of Antarctica that you have very little control of them, and they rise to the edge of the Earth's atmosphere, the ones that we were doing, and then it's the air current, so there's very, very little control, so the possibility of one drifting. There's no intended course. The intended course is depending on what the weather patterns are in the past and the way it looks at the present. But you don't have any. It's a semi uncontrollable device once it's launched and in the air.
Oh my goodness. Of course, now we're getting into the zone where America and Canada definitely is worried about doing science. So maybe that the solution will be to say, we don't care anymore about that. We just shoot them all down. We need less science because too many Asians are doing science. So if we do less, then we'll live happily ever after. We're speaking to Rick Sterling. And by the way, Rick, you're going to be part of a program at the Hamilton Coalition Against the War.ca on this Saturday.
It's going to be
the 25th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Eastern Standard Time. And they're going to be talking about Ukraine and West Asia. And I'll just... I hope people will attend that. And I want to ask you, could you help us explain what this problem is with getting aid to Syria? Why does everybody say, oh, we've got to give aid to Turkey, but they're not helping Syria, or they're not even able to help if they want to.
Right.
I know that there's that efforts are being made. But what is the problem?
Well, the root of the problem is the U.S. sanctions on Syria, which are draconian. the most severe were put on in 2020, called the Caesar. They with in full 1984 mode, they called them the Caesar Civilian Protection Act, and that's imposing sanctions on. It's basically prohibiting the West and any third party from aiding in the reconstruction of Syria from after many years of war, and especially their energy sector. There are severe penalties on any corporation or individual or even a government if they can get their hands on it to help Syria, and so they've been suffering largely because of that, as well as the fact that most people don't know that U.S. troops are occupying, approximately a third of Syria. That they have a small number of troops along with a separatist force there in the east, and then a U.S. force in the south that is responsible for stealing the oil, stealing the wheat. This is the primary oil-producing sector, which not only provided energy, gas, and oil for Syria, but it was one of their export items where they made money, and they supplied it to Lebanon and other areas that are not energy rich. So it's really so horrible what has been done to the Syrian people who have endured 12 years now of war and bloodshed and sectarianism, sponsored by the West, fully paid for by the West, and Western allied countries, and now they're prevented from rebuilding their country. And then on top of all that, they had the earthquake, which was very severe in northern Syria. And then on top of that, just 2 days ago, Israel attacked and a missile hit an apartment building in downtown Damascus, killing 15 people. Yeah. And yet the West just looks the other way and pretends that it didn't happen.
It rules-based, what is it? Our values and rules-based international order, and apparently that's part of the order. You can fly over Syrian airspace and attack Damascus, and without any consequence.
With impunity.
With impunity, Rick Sterling. It's great to talk to you, and we look forward to this program on Saturday. We'd like to talk to you again. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Phil. Take care.
Okay. Bye bye. That's Rick Sterling. And Phil, do you have all the information there on the Saturday event?
I do actually. It's
Read it.
I have an email from the Hamilton Coalition to stop the war. So let me just get that out.
We know it's Saturday.
Saturday the 25th at 1:00. And it is, you can contact HCSW, that's Hamilton Coalition Stop the War, at kojiko.ca. And, it's really small print, but it looks like it's at bit.ly/dots Ukraine Asia. And that's how you can register for the event. So that's bit.ly/dots Ukraine Asia. The guest appearance by Dr. Paul Laroudé, Dr. Atif Kaboursi, Marwa Osman, and Rick Sterling, who we just interviewed.
Yeah.
So that's this Saturday at 1 o'clock.
Okay. Well, I wish them well, and I think that this matter of the treatment of Syria is a criminal, in my view. These sanctions are not legal. And we keep hearing this stuff about how we represent democracy and the rules-based international order. Well, the rules do not allow for sanctions, but we're doing it. And we need to go back to the UN Charter. And just lastly, on making that point, apropos of Sinophobia, which the Globe is stirring up very irresponsibly, and all the other parties are too, frankly. But they mentioned that China is sensitive about the issue of Taiwan, which they describe as an independent island, a self-ruled island. That's disinformation. It's called the Republic of China. It's the name of the country, that country. And the United States says, according in their agreement with China, that Taiwan, the island, is a part of China. There's only one China. There's not two Chinas or a partial China. And so the globe is dealing in disinformation, which is why you listen to the Taylor Report to get the right information. This is CIUT 89.5 FM, and I think it's time for our exit.